our city council meeting, and Councilmember Funk will start us with a pledge of allegiance. Well, I'll call to order this regular session of the Atascadero City Council.
You're muted, Susan.
Thank you. Sorry about that. We'll try this again. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you. Wonderful. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbo?
Here.
Councilmember Darris?
Here.
Councilmember Funk?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Newsom?
She's muted.
She's here but muted.
She's here. We see her. And Mayor Moreno?
Here. I'm like, I can hear everybody else.
And here. All right. Well, now that everybody is present...
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Yes, we just did that publicly.
Very much.
Happy birthday, Laura. We didn't double your salary at the last meeting, but we wanted to celebrate you today.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome. And we're always always grateful for our employees when they're willing to celebrate their birthdays with us, especially when we have an agenda item that she is in charge of. All right. On to, let's see, can I get a motion to approve the agenda?
Also move.
We have a motion by Councilmember Borbeau and a second by Councilmember Funk, and we will waive the reading in full of all ordinances that are appearing on this agenda, and the titles of the ordinances will be read aloud by the city clerk at the first reading after the motion and before the council votes. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. And now I will ask our city attorney if we have any reportable action from our February 8th closed session. You will see on the agenda we had a February 16th scheduled, but that meeting was canceled, so there's no reportable action from that. But I'll ask Mr. Pierrick about February 8th.
The answer is there's no reportable action.
Thank you very much. We'll move on to presentations, and our first one is our employee recognition. We've gotten to we normally do these regularly in person, but now we've got some video recordings, and I will go ahead and turn that over to whoever is going to be sharing those.
We're going to start with Alan. We'll put him in the hot box first, so come on up, Alan. This is very exciting today. Today we have... three employees that we are recognizing. They have all been with the city for 20 years now. So between these three, we have 60 years of experience right here at the city of Atascadero in service to our community. So Woo-hoo! Yay, way to go. So I'm gonna talk to you about Alan Baker. He is our zoo director at the Charles Paddock Zoo. For over 20 years now, Alan has successfully shepherded the Charles Paddock Zoo through quite a number of upgrades and improvements and changes. He continually strives to advance the zoo's animal habitats and exhibits and spends many hours coordinating arrangements with other AZA-accredited facilities. This allows us to bring in new animals, be part of the SSPs and saving animals from extinction safe, learning all these acronyms over the year. Really making a difference in our world. Additionally, Alan is well known in the zoological world as a herpetology expert for reptiles and amphibians. Amphibians? Does it include a... Yeah? Okay. Due to this extensive knowledge and expertise, we currently house and breed multiple species of endangered turtles and tortoises at the zoo. The zoo continues to undergo a transformation under Alan's direction. As regular zoo visitors all know by now, our flamingo flock has been successfully mating, nesting, and producing adorable flamingo chicks for the past 5 years or so. And based on our zoo meeting this morning, they want to get an early start at it again this year. We're trying to slow them down. Crystal's doing her best there. We have a beautiful new red panda exhibit, and our Zoo Garden Event Center is a terrific new outdoor facility that's perfect for holding zoo education classes, zoo camp programs, and other city and community events. Throughout the COVID pandemic, Alan and his team of zookeepers and other staff members were not only able to safely carry on and keep the facility and animals in tip-top shape, they took on new challenges and implemented innovative ideas and methods for zoo visitors to be able to continue to enjoy and learn about our animals and wildlife conservation programs safely and remotely from their own living rooms. We now have, and due to their popularity, especially for our non-local zoo fans, and we plan to keep offering virtual zoo education programs, field trips, zoo tours, and more. Alan has also successfully guided us through what now seems like a multitude of very complex and rigorous rounds of the Association of Zoo Aquarium accreditation reviews. Very, very tough program. This is the same program that the San Diego Zoo, Smithsonian, Walt Disney World, all the big zoos go to be AZA accredited. And as he said, everybody, but not all zoos are accredited. I think there's over 5,000 zoos here in the United States and only about 300 are accredited. Is that correct? Yeah. So we're the top 10% of all zoos in the nation. We have to meet those strict standards. He has consistently been committed to seeing the zoo become a dynamic, fully equipped, and modern zoological conservation and education center. AZA accreditation is granted for 5-year periods. It seems to be much sooner than that every time. The zoo goes through this complex investigation and inspection process. Alan has been pivotal in ensuring that our zoo consistently achieves and exceeds AZA's ever-increasing standards. So thank you, Alan, for your 20 years of service to the Atascadero community, to the zoo staff, to our animals, and for your ongoing love and dedication to animal care, welfare, and conservation. So thank you, Alan. Yay. Charles, toes at the front there. So this is Matt Miranda. He is a battalion chief here and has been with the city for 20 years. Matt was first hired as a reserve and seasonal firefighter for Atascadero in 1999. If you guys do the math, that's more than 20 years, but we don't start counting until they become a full-time employee. Those are just bonus years, so he's been here 20-plus years. When he started in 99, he had just graduated from Atascadero High School and was attending Cuesta College. He obtained an Associate of Arts and Liberal Studies from Cuesta and then continued to Allen Hancock College, where he has earned his Associate of Science in Fire Technology. Matt then completed a Bachelor of Science degree in Occupational Studies at Cal State Long Beach. We hired Matt as a full-time firefighter in November 2001. He was promoted to fire engineer 2 years later and then promoted to fire captain in 2009. While serving our community as fire captain for 12 years, Matt handled numerous assignments, including technical rescue team manager, disaster response trailer project manager, training officer, and scheduling officer. Matt was promoted to the position of a operations battalion chief in January 2021. He is currently active in both county and statewide training groups. He is a strike team leader and a member of the San Luis Obispo County Incident Management Team. As the Operations Battalion Chief, Matt now oversees all of the assignments that he previously managed over the last 20 years with the Atascadero Fire. All that, along with all day-to-day scheduling, training, and operations duty, he assists the Fire Chief with multiple projects and programs such as our citywide emergency evacuation program. Matt is very active in the community with the Atascadero Bible Church. He coaches local youth sports and participates in many of our city-sponsored events. Matt and his wife, Megan, live here in Atascadero with their two children, Andrew and Clara. They spend their off time working on home projects and driving Andrew and Clara to their numerous sporting events. So is that pretty much it? So thank you, Matt, for 20 years of service. Thank you on behalf of the community and all of the multitude of us that get to work with you. So we appreciate having you here. Thank you. Dave, last. This is Dave Muehlhausen, last but definitely not least. He is our Deputy Director of Community Development and Building Official. He's been a building inspector for nearly 30 years, but he began his career here at the city as a building inspector just a little over 20 years ago now. He advanced to Senior Building Inspector and in more recent years to the position of Chief Building Official and Deputy Director of the department. He is an extremely valuable department team member and is well known for his extensive building code knowledge and dedication to customer service. Dave takes pride in always being professional and for providing excellent, straightforward customer service. He consistently goes the extra mile to get whatever job that needs done, done. So Dave is very responsive, wants to make it work. I love that about Dave. He was integral to the successful completion of the Rehabilitation Historic City Hall in 2013. He heads up the front counter building and staff and continually strives to make improvements to the permitting process with an emphasis towards streamlining and keeping communications open between applicants and staff. He supports common sense regulations while also maintaining respect of the building code and upholding the city's ethical obligations to enforce it. Dave excels in looking for solutions to problems and helping applicants resolve code conflicts. He stays current with all applicable trends, laws, and policy, and takes an active role in a wide variety of training programs. Dave lives here in town with his wife, Luann, while his daughters now live out of the area. I know you're still close to them, visit often, so that's a good thing. So with that, we've been very lucky to have Dave. I appreciate his attitude in helping people get things done. And so thank you, Dave, for your 20 years of excellent service to the community of Atascadero. So thank you. So that's pretty impressive. The employees that we're recognizing this quarter, 60 years right here with the city of Atascadero, and our community is really lucky to have them. So let's give them one more round of applause and thank them for their service.
All right. Many congratulations to Alan, Dave, and Matt. And it's nice that we're doing some of these things virtually and recognizing our employees and being able to share that with all of you. Now we are going to, we have a proclamation recognizing the 100-year anniversary of the Fire and Emergency Services here in Atascadero that will be received virtually by Chief Bryson, and I've asked Mayor Pro Tem Newsom to deliver that.
Thank you. In recognition of the 100-year anniversary of the Atascadero Fire Protection District, now known as Atascadero Fire and Emergency Services, whereas in 1915, at the beginning of the colony of Atascadero, a small, all-volunteer fire department was established to serve the newly formed community, and whereas in 1922, following a disastrous 5,000-acre wildland fire near the Eagle Ranch property, the Atascadero Fire Protection District was first founded, and whereas the Atascadero Fire Protection District was founded as an all-volunteer force dedicated to providing the community of 3,000 residents and an area of 7 square miles with consistent fire protection services. And whereas on February 4th, 1926, the colony of Atascadero's first paid fire department was established. And whereas when the city of Atascadero was incorporated in 1979, the Atascadero Fire Protection District was dissolved and the Atascadero Fire Department became an official part of the newly incorporated city. And whereas the Atascadero Fire Department grew through the years from one fire station to two and from 10 to 21 paid fire personnel, and whereas the Atascadero Fire Department's mission has adapted and evolved to encompass the increasingly complex needs of our growing community, constantly striving to provide swift and excellent fire and emergency response to its citizens, and whereas in 2021, Atascadero Fire and Emergency Services provided our community with professional emergency responses to 3,546 emergency calls, which included over 2,280 emergency medical calls, 22 structure fires, and 11 grass or brush fire calls. Now, therefore, on behalf of the City Council of the City of Atascadero, and in recognition of its more than 100 years of superior fire protection services to the community, I hereby proclaim our sincerest congratulations and appreciation to the Atascadero Fire and Emergency Services. Thank you.
Chief, would you like to say a few words?
Well, yeah, thank you very much for the nice proclamation, Mayor and Council. 100 years is definitely something worth celebrating. This is a milestone. We've, as a department, we've been talking a little bit about what we want to do and how we could best connect with that past. And one of the things we've done recently is we grabbed a bunch of our retired old timers and a bunch of boxes of old photos and kind of gone through and tried to figure out who's who and look for a way where we can share some of these historical documents with the community. So we're looking for some way to publish that or at least get these photos out where we can share. So we do have a pretty fascinating history. We're going to be wearing some new badges for the rest of the year here coming up in the next few weeks. It kind of ties our history with the Fire Protection District to the Fire Department to Emergency Services. So there's more of a historical looking badge. We have a new t-shirt with actually a logo that was designed and worn by the association over probably about 40 years ago. So trying to connect with a little bit of our past. And as we celebrate over the year, we're looking for a few events. We'd like to do an open house here in the spring, get the community down to the fire station again. Hopefully that will keep going in the right direction with COVID and be able to have people at the fire station again. We'll look for a few events late summer and fall, definitely colony days. Hopefully one of our summer events we can connect with the community and do a little celebrating there. I know the union's excited to bring back the Fireman's Ball, which hasn't been held in 2 or 3 years, so we're excited for that. And it's just an exciting time. We have a lot to look forward to. Hopefully, maybe even we'll be kicking off a public safety or fire department building. That'd be a great time to do it on our 100-year anniversary. I know we have a fire engine to be delivered, wildland engine, this fall. So we're just exciting times for the fire department, and we're proud to serve. And thanks again for the proclamation.
Thank you, Chief, and thanks to the department and all that you do to keep our community safe. And I know that Councilmember Borbo and I are willing to be there and help put out the car fire again, so you just call on us and we're on top
Absolutely.
Of it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. All right. Now we are on to our consent calendar. And the consent calendar consists of items that are considered to be routine and non-controversial by city staff, and they'll be approved in one motion if there's no member of the council or the public that wishes to pull an item. So I will look to the council and see, is there any council member that wishes to pull an item on the consent calendar? I am seeing none. I will go to the public and see if there's anyone in the public that is wishing. Zach, I see your hand, and I don't think you're wanting to pull an item. You're probably wanting to speak to fire, so I'll bring you on right after this. And if I'm wrong and you're wanting to pull an item, you let me know. All right, anyone wishing to pull? I'm not seeing anyone. I will close public comment, bring it back to council for a motion.
I'll move approval.
Second.
Motion by Councilmember Funks, second by Mayor Pro Tem Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes. Mayor Pro Tem Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes. Thank you. And yes, Zach, you may have had your hand up while the chief was talking, and I maybe failed to see that. So let's go ahead and bring on Zach Jackson.
Can you hear me?
I can, yes.
Again, Zach Jackson, president of a local 3,600 professional firefighters. We just want to reach out and say thank you for the proclamation for the 100 years. It's definitely a turning point in our department and city's history with the fire department and the things that we've accomplished. Additionally, to all the great things that Chief was talking about, the things that we're doing, we're on March 11th. We're actually kicking off a fundraiser for a local resident that's battling ALS. We're going to be doing a drive-through barbecue fundraiser at Station 1. It's going to come through. We're going to do tri-tip sandwiches, chips, and a drink. It's going to be $15, and any other donations are going to be welcome. So it's kind of going to be like one of the first things that we do. We haven't done any fundraisers in the last couple of years with COVID. So with the 100-year celebration, we're also going to be kicking off our continued support to our citizens. It's one of our local citizens. He used to work at the golf course. His name is Keith Dozier. He's actually just lost his ability to move some of his hands and stuff like that. So ALS is really taking a turning point on his life. So it's kind of a big thing to help his family out, to help pay for some of the things that he's going through. So I just wanted to throw that in there as well.
Zach, thank you for letting us know about that and the entire community. I'm assuming that's probably also on the association's Facebook page, maybe, about the fundraiser.
Yes, it should be out all over Facebook and Instagram as well. So, all right. And we'll have tickets we'll be selling at the fire station, or just talk to any of our firefighters, and they're located in my mailbox. They can sell them there. Okay. And then any other donations are welcome as well. So,
of course. Thank you so much, and thanks for all that you do for our community.
Thanks for your support.
Good thing. Okay, we're on to now updates from our city manager, Ms. Rickert.
Thank you, Mayor. Can you see my screen okay?
Yep,
fantastic. The first thing I want to talk about tonight are some of the new businesses here in town. So we'd like to welcome several new businesses who have opened or soon will open for business in town. The first one is Sunroom Coffee at 6225 Atascadero Avenue. It's located in front of Atascadero Bible Church, and it is open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. We also have Carbon 6 Wine Bar at 5940 El Camino Real, and that's open Thursday through Sunday. And last but not least, Mountain Mike's Pizza is nearly ready to open, located next to Holiday Inn Express on West Front Road. So welcome to those businesses. We want to thank them for choosing to invest in Atascadero. And hopefully the community will come right out, give them a try, and welcome them here to Atascadero. We have an At Her Table Street Festival coming. This new event will be hosted by Fossil Wine Bar and our downtown businesses. It will be held Sunday, March 13th from noon to 5 p.m. on Entrada Avenue. It's going to have great food, beverages, live music, vendors, and more. So again, Sunday, March 13th, come on down to Entrada, walk around, check out our shops, and definitely visit Fossil Wine Bar. We have Central Coast Craft Beer Festival, the fourth annual Central Coast Craft Beer Fest, presented by the Central Coast Brewers Guild. We held Saturday, March 26th from noon to 4 p.m. here at the Sunken Gardens. It has over 55 local craft breweries, wineries, seltzers, and cideries from all over California. There will be live entertainment, plenty of food trucks, and a great variety of street fair vendors and lawn games. So go to visitatascadero.com for more information. That does sell out each year, so go take a peek sooner rather than later. Want to remind everybody it's time for spring sports sign-up. So registrations for spring youth volleyball, t-ball, and spring adult basketball are now available. And deadlines for all spring sports are coming soon. So go to atascadero.org/recreation. Again, as soon as possible. Party for the Planet exhibitor booth registrations are now open.
This will be held on Saturday, April 23rd at the Charles Paddock Zoo. If you're part of an earth-friendly organization that would like to be included, please contact Flavia, our lead zookeeper, at 805-461-5080. I want to tell you a little bit about our downtown tree planting and sidewalk repairs. I think last time we met, I told you, hey, they're coming. I'm going to let you know that they're in. So they completed planting 8 new trees out in the sunken gardens last week. The young trees were all lovingly planted, mulched, and watered and protected with temporary fencing. In addition, approximately 20 street trees have been planted or are scheduled to be planted in empty tree wells in the downtown area over the next couple of weeks, including 10 new trees to be planted on Entrada starting tomorrow. To prepare for the tree plantings on Entrada, several damaged sidewalks immediately adjacent to the tree wells have been repaired. The repairs improve ADA access and reduce potential safety issues, and staff will continue to work with property and business owners on the proper maintenance and irrigation of the new trees. We had a free wood chip giveaway last weekend. We had hundreds of residents who stopped by to have wood chips loaded by staff into their vehicles. The event helps community members to use chips for weed control, which in turn helps to reduce potential fire risk. The city will be hosting several more of these events over the next couple of months. So if you missed out, stay tuned because there will be other opportunities in the future. I want to tell you a little bit. We've had a lot of questions about trafficway sewer line replacement. Wanted to get you some information on that. So the trafficway sewer main replacement project is now over halfway completed with about 3,000 feet of new sewer main installed and another 2,500 feet remaining to be completed. The project replaces the existing 10 to 12 inch sewer mains with a larger 15 to 18 inch PVC sewer mains between San Jacinto Avenue and Lift Station 5, which is located behind the community center. Work also includes construction of 22 new manholes, reconnecting 55 lateral sewer lines to the new main, and once all trench work has been completed, complete repaving of the half width of roadway. This segment of sewer line accepts and transports all of the wastewater flows originating from north of San Anselmo Road along the El Camino Corridor, as well as the Apple Valley and Lakes developments and residential neighborhoods to the west of Traffic Way. Replacement of the stretch of main has been identified as a priority project because it is no longer adequately sized to handle the existing flow nor the anticipated future demand. While we would certainly like to see more rain, the dry weather has enabled the project to progress on schedule, and it is anticipated to be complete in May. The contractor, Specialty Construction Incorporated, and the construction manager, Philippin Engineering, have been communicating with business owners and residents throughout the project in order to minimize the impacts to them to the greatest extent possible. But due to the nature of constructing a linear project, traffic control is required, and delays should be expected throughout the duration of the project. So we're about halfway there. It's a great project, will make a huge difference, we'll do that. I want to tell you that a particular note tomorrow, Wednesday, February 23rd, access to Via Avenue from Traffic Way will be closed for work within the intersection, but businesses on Via Avenues will remain open. And so you can access the, they will be accessible from either Capistrano Avenue or Highway 41 from the south. And this is a great project too. We will be abandoning our existing sewer mains, and those can be used for broadband conduit in the future. So we appreciate everyone's continued patience and understanding. And if you need more information, please contact our Public Works Department at 805-470-3456 or by email publicworks, all one word, at atascadero.org. And Chief Masterson, are you here and available to give us an update on D20 and police staffing? I know I've got a lot of questions from the public on how are we doing on hiring officers and getting fully staffed, and so I thought maybe he could just give a little update if he's available.
Hi, I am here. Can you all hear me well?
Yes.
Perfect. Hi. So just for a quick update on D20 money, as far as it goes along the lines of police staffing. After D20 passed, we had 7 vacancies in the sworn side of the House. That was the 2 we had vacant and 5 that we added with D20 money. And we had 4 vacancies on the dispatcher side of the House. That was the original 7 in the 1 position we added. However, good news is we've hired actually 3 dispatchers. Unfortunately, the bad news is we lost 1 dispatcher that moved to Tennessee. So although we hired 3, we're up to 6, which is 2 shy of the full 8 allotment. We did just have some testing last week, and we have oral interviews coming up this coming week, where we advanced 5 people from the written testing into the oral testing. So we're excited with that. They look like 4 or 5 really good, strong candidates. So we'll see how the oral interviews go after that. In the sworn side of the House, we've hired 7 people, which at first you would think would be exciting, but we lost 1. So we're actually down to 6. So we actually have 1 in background. We have 1 officer in training. He's in his field training portion. We hired a lateral officer with 13 years experience. He completed his field training already, and he's on the streets. And we have 2 going to the Lone Polk Academy. We have 1 in the Fresno Academy that will be graduating in March. And we have 1 about to start the Academy in South Bay Regional. All of those candidates who are in the Academy, with the exception of the 1 currently in training, are all local people from the San Luis Obispo area. So we're really excited about that, that they were hiring locally and they're staying locally. And we currently have 1 person in background from another agency who lives in Atascadero but has expressed a desire to work with us. So that brings it up. Bottom numbers is we're 1 officer shy position-wise and 2 dispatchers shy. So that's our D20 money in a nutshell tonight.
Thank you, Chief. It is exciting. Although not all those officers are on the street yet, there's great news because they're all in the pipeline. And same thing with dispatchers. Thank you, Chief. And with You're that, welcome. I'd be happy to answer any questions that Council may have.
That is indeed some good news. Council, any questions of the City Manager? Not seeing everybody. There we go. Nope, seeing none. All right. Thank you so much. All right. Now we are on to community forum, and this is the portion of our meeting reserved for persons who are wishing to address the council on any matter that's not on the agenda tonight, but over which the council has jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes, and we will allow a maximum of 30 minutes for community forum. We do ask that you state your name for the record, and also know that any items brought up for during public comment don't become a subject for discussion at this evening's meeting. And we will have the timer going so that you can see your 3-minute marker. And with that, we open community forum, and I will look to the hands in the webinar. If you're on the webinar, go ahead and press the raise hand button if you'd like to speak. If you're on the phone, you can simply press *9. Don't be shy. I'm not seeing anyone, so go ahead, raise your hand. If you didn't want to be first, someone's got to be first. Luke, do we have anyone on the phone?
We do not.
All right. So I'm going to give this a final go. Anyone wishing to speak? All right, I will close community forum. We will, since we have nobody wishing to speak, it will remain open until 7:03, and the council will move on to the next item. But if there's someone that comes in and decides you would like to speak before that 7:03 mark, you go ahead and raise your hand or press *9, and we will bring you on at the earliest possible opportunity, which will be, you know, after the item that we happen to be discussing is finished. And with that, we'll move on to our public hearings. Our one and only public hearing tonight is a ratification of an approval of a hazardous tree removal. I will first look to council to see if we have any ex parte communication. All right, seeing none, we will move to Community Development Director, Mr. Phil Densmore, who will be making this presentation for us.
Great. Thank you, Mayor, and good evening, Council. Real quickly, I just want to go over a tree that was removed from East Mall a couple of months ago. Unfortunately, one of those what we call heritage live oaks had perished, unfortunately, due to age and due to some disease. Let me show you a little presentation, making sure you can see my screen. Can you? Yes? Oh, things are locking up there a little bit.
I can see it.
Okay, good. My internet slowed down there for some reason. Anyway, as I was saying, it was a 55-inch coast live oak that was on East Mall. It was identified to be a hazard by a local arborist. We did approve an emergency removal. So what we're looking at tonight is really a post-removal. Normally, we look at these things before they're taken out. But in this case, the tree had died, and it was an emergency situation. Just a little history and why these things are heritage trees. A lot of the trees around Sunken Gardens Park were planted as part of the Atascadero Civic Center around 1915. That includes the coast live oaks that are on East Mall and West Mall. And, of course, the big cedars that are actually in the park. A couple of years ago, when we redid our tree ordinance, we did designate those specific trees, those really grand coast live oaks that line the streets and they're parallel to the streets, as these heritage trees. And those are the only trees that really need to be blessed by the city council for removal. They're sort of the trees that we prize the most highly in the community. So this particular tree right next to the parking lot of the Century 21, it's actually on private property, but it's still kind of in the public realm. There's a location as it stands today. The stump is left over at that little location there. Recommendation for tonight is for council to adopt a draft resolution that ratifies staff's approval of that removal of that tree that was previously located there. And the conditions call out for the property owner to actually replant a tree on site. Now, that means grinding out the existing root, replanting a tree that's specified at a 36-inch box size, and proceeding along with that. Now, a little bit interesting, what staff is suggesting in this scenario is that we actually utilize city's native tree funds to help supplement the cost of this activity. Now, if the applicant was to pay the straight mitigation, it's just under $1,000 is what's due based on the size of that tree. But that's not actually enough money to replant this specific tree, pay for the removal of the stump, and do all that work. And additionally, it's not easy for the city to go do work on private property. So what we would like to have happen is for the property owner to do the work of doing the tree, pay towards that work with the mitigation cost, the just less than $1,000, but for us to be able to supplement the remaining cost with our native tree fund up to an amount of $3,500 so that they can actually get a sufficient tree in there and be able to afford to do the work. So this is a little different than how we do it most of the time. And it's because it is a very significant tree. It's a heritage tree, and we do need a significant tree to go back in there so that we have succession in the future. As always, we do throw out some alternatives. The council could revise the project conditions, or we can continue this item if we do have additional discussion or items. But for now, I'd be happy to answer your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Director. Any questions from the City Council? Council Member Borba.
Phil, thank you. In the list of conditions, something is mentioned about requiring irrigation. And I know, we need to get these things established, but is there already irrigation there? I mean, we're not going to require them to tear up the parking lot and run an irrigation line over there, are we? That would be.
Oh, you're muted.
I'm muted?
Phyllis.
That was me this time. Sorry about that. The intent is not to have them tear up the parking lot and add irrigation. The intent is if they can actually drag a hose over there and water this tree, or if there's irrigation in. Asking for is the tree to get planted, the area to get mulched. If we can put some ground cover in there because it's a big planter.
Okay, thank you. As long as you're just saying, as long as they water it, keep it alive, you're going to check on it, all will be good. Yeah, I just want to make sure we weren't going that, you know, going to make them go some extra mile and install irrigation system, because that would, to me, that would be excessive. And this arrangement has more or less, because this had been on our agenda previously and understood that the owner had asked for delay. This has been worked out with the owner, and this is agreeable to the owner, this arrangement?
That's right. Yeah, they needed the extra time to get estimates to actually do the work and purchase the tree. So we gave them that extra time. They did get some estimates. They actually have already paid out some money to have the tree removed. They're going to have to pay additional to have this trunk removed. So they needed some additional time to take a look at the situation. But it does sound like the property owner is agreeable to the terms of which we're proposing.
Thank you.
Councilmember Funk, followed by Mayor Pro Tem Newsom.
Thanks. One quick question. Could you remind us all of the source of the native tree funds? And you're muted.
Why do I keep doing that tonight? I apologize. Native tree funds come from the removal of trees throughout the cities. Whenever someone removes a native tree, they have the option of mitigating by paying into the native tree fund or by replanting on site. And so we do build up funds, small amount of funds from time to time, from development projects where there are trees removed.
Thank you.
And Mayor Pro Tem Newsom.
You said this item, or our notes said this item was not something that we budget for.
We don't have a budget for doing work on private property on trees. Instead, this is kind of a unique situation where we're saying, hey, we do have native tree funds. They can only be used for the purpose of replanting native trees, and whether those native trees are on, you know, established properties, commercial districts, or out in the wildlands, that's what these funds are for. We don't necessarily have a budget for doing work in this sort of a circumstance. This is a little different.
Okay. So I'm assuming this is the first time we've had requests for those funds.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Seeing no other questions, thank you, Director, and thank you for being flexible with the property owner and making this work. It is an important site, you know, that historic tree and the rest of the whole park area. And so we thank the property owner for working with us, and I'm glad we came to a solution that is good for all. All right. As we have no other questions, I'm going to go to the public and see if there are any members of the public wishing to comment on this item. You can go ahead and raise your hand at the bottom of the screen, pressing star or press star 9 if you're on the phone. Anyone wishing to speak on this item? All right, seeing no one, I will close public comment and bring it back to council for a motion.
I move that we adopt staff's recommendations 1 and 2.
I second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Borbeau and a second by Mayor Pro Tem Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. All right. We have one more item on our agenda tonight, and it is a management report. It's SB 1383, which is the new solid waste requirements. And I do want to let anyone know listening in or watching who's not on the webinar or hasn't called in yet, I want to remind you of the phone number for public comment is 805-538-2888 to provide comment via phone. So again, 805-538-2888. And I will turn this over to our deputy city manager, Ms. Laura Christensen, the birthday girl.
Thank you, Mayor Moreno and Council. I'm going to share my screen. Let's see. What? Oh, here we go. Okay, let's make sure that showed up for everybody. Okay, so tonight we're here to talk about SB 1383 and the new solid waste requirements. I know we've talked about this numerous times before, but now we're at the point where we have to do our required ordinance updates to meet the SB 1383 regulations. Let's see if I can. There we go. Just really quickly, SB 1383 was signed into law back in September 2016, though it didn't become effective till January 1st of 2022.
It is the most significant change to solid waste regulations in the past 30 years. The purpose of SB 1383 is to reduce the emissions of short-lived climate pollutants, which they call SLCP. And the strategy is basically to manage the presence of methane emissions from organic waste. Since landfills are one of the three largest producers of methane gases, the goal was to address methane production from landfills. And the statewide targets were 50% reduction by 2020, 75% reduction by 2025, and to include a 20% recovery of disposed edible food. That I know it seems odd that the regulations didn't go into effect until January 2022, but there was this 50% reduction by January 2020. And years, it feels like years, I guess it's only been 2 years, but AB 1826 went into effect in January 2020, which started part of that 50% reduction by 2020, where it looked at reducing organic waste in landfills by looking at the level of production from large-scale generators such as restaurants and grocery stores and hotels, that type of stuff. So AB 1826 sort of kicked this all off with looking at needing to have large-scale organic waste or large-scale waste generators start to divert organic waste. Regulations weren't actually finalized by CalRecycle until November 2020. And as I mentioned, they became effective January 1st. So that really gave jurisdictions only 14 months to get everything basically figured out and in place to begin the implementation of that and have it in place and ready to roll. And so what these regulations did was it impacts jurisdictions, so cities, counties, special districts, all of those types, basically says that those agencies have to implement organic waste diversion programs. And these diversion programs are all based on the SB 1383 requirements. So what they're looking for is that we put in organic waste collection services. We have those in place. We have edible food recovery programs in place, that we're doing public education and outreach, that we are, and when I say we, I really mean the city, because what the regulations say is that this is the city's responsibility to make sure all of these programs are in place and happening. This includes contamination monitoring and sampling activities, record keeping and reporting. There's all types of annual record keeping and reporting that needs to be done. That infrastructure capacity planning, they really want jurisdictions to look at how we can better cover food, how we can better process organic waste without it going to landfills. So by composting, mulching, that type of stuff. They have requirements that jurisdictions procure recovered organic waste products and that jurisdictions enforce these regulations on waste generators. And that's the big reason for they say you have to create some type of enforcement program, which is where the ordinance basically comes from. So we're adopting all these SB 1383 and giving us that enforcement ability that's required by SB 1383. So what we're doing with the municipal code updates are solid waste municipal code was last updated in 1982. Obviously, there's been quite a few regulations since then. A lot of the new regulations, what we had in place, either went along with it or we were able to address it in our franchise agreement, which covered, you know, all those regulations that happened. But now with SB 1383, SB 1383 says, no, you can't just cover it in your franchise agreement. You actually have to have it built into your ordinance or built into your municipal code. So what we're doing now is updating our municipal code. We're updating definitions because obviously a ton of definitions have changed with the new regulations. So we need to make sure that those definitions are captured in our municipal code, as well as making sure we're requiring all waste generators. So that means all residential properties, all multifamily properties, all commercial businesses, all waste generators to source separate their waste streams. That single family, multifamily, and commercial have recycling and or green containers, because they may already have one or the other, but now to make sure that customers have all three. That those who don't sign on to receive services, collection services from our waste hauler, that they either obtain no cost permits from the city to self haul, or that they obtain a waiver for organics containers if they're eligible. Carryover from something else. Don't, that 93 participation should not be there. And then annually as needed, we have to make sure that all education to their customers, they're providing it to their tenants, they're providing it to their employees. We have to include our minimum enforcement provisions necessary to both to monitor compliance, so that we have to make sure waste generators are complying with it. We have to begin enforcement by January 1st, 2024. So we have, in essence, the next 2 years to really do that education, do that outreach, and make sure that generators in the city understand and are meeting compliance, so that come January 1st, 2024, we aren't having to actually do any enforcement because we already have everybody complying. We are required, because we have this compliance requirement, we are required to do inspection and investigations of containers, collection vehicle loads, facilities, or source separated materials if they're self-hauling or that nature. And that is actually built into the regulation that says that we are required to do these types of investigations. And that's of both commercial and residential for doing hauler route reviews. For commercial, you know, we have to go in and inspect in terms of edible food recovery to make sure that they are actually doing the required edible food recovery, that they are actually maintaining the paperwork that they're required to maintain. So we do have these inspections and investigations that are required. We, as I just mentioned, edible food recovery programs, that those are in place and that they edible food is actually being recovered. We're required to address that in our ordinance, which in this draft ordinance before you is in there, and that they are implementing that. We have to make sure education and outreach is being done to all waste generators in the city. We, again, the planning and securing access for recycling and edible food recovery capacity. So where we have that ability, we need to help food recovery organizations and, you know, those who come and collect that food, to allow them the ability to basically plan for and access food. And then make sure we're doing the accurate record keeping and annual reporting. So those are really the top things that are on SB 1383, why we've had to go forward and do this, is that's what the regulations require. Where there's allowed flexibility, such as self-hauling, which I've mentioned, waivers, which I've mentioned, jurisdictions don't have to, the regulations allow for it. Some jurisdictions across the state aren't doing that. We have said that we will allow for waivers and we will allow for self-hauling. So where we have been able to put things in place to give some flexibility to waste generators, we've done that. Where it comes to enforcement, you know, we've adopted the minimum enforcement provisions so that, you know, we can continue to educate and we can continue to do a lot of that without, you know, coming down on someone where it feels like we're coming down with a hammer, and really utilizing the next 2 years to do that before we get to enforcement requirements. In talking with our hauler in some of the definitions that were proposed, there were some things that they wanted us to clarify. And so what I have for you on this slide and the next one are just some changes that we've proposed to the ordinance that's before you. In bulky items, we'd like to take up tires. They don't accept tires, so we'd like to make sure that that's removed. In recyclable materials, instead of sort of what we have here with mixed paper, we'd like to call out exactly what is in the definitions for paper products and printing and writing paper so that it's very clear that paper products and printing and writing papers, those are considered organic waste. They are not organic materials, meaning they go in the blue container, not the green container. And then also here, we had taken out yard trimmings. We didn't include yard trimmings because it only mentions it in the definitions. We don't talk about it later on, but we wanted to go ahead and put this back in so that it's very clear when you look at organic materials, you know what is allowed in the green bins, and that it is yard trimmings and food waste. And food waste is defined, and so we wanted to make sure yard trimmings were there too so that people understand while it says, you know, for example, it says wood and lumber, that they understand that that's unpainted and untreated. Because treated wood, treated lumber, that is not, it's not acceptable in your green waste, carpet, you know, organic textiles. Those are considered organic waste, but they aren't recyclable as, you know, organic materials. So those are some revisions we are recommending for today. On top of these, this ordinance that we have to do, we also have to do a separate ordinance because we need to establish water efficient landscape. We need to establish a water efficient landscape and irrigation ordinance that models the state one. We do now say that in our Title VIII, it does say that everyone is required to follow the CalGreen requirements, but SB 1383 wanted very specific language regarding water efficient landscape and irrigation to be included somewhere in the city's municipal code. So we need to go in and add that. And then SB 1383 also puts a requirement on jurisdictions that we adopt a policy regarding the purchase of recycled content paper and recycled organic waste products. So in essence, if the city is going to order any type, like you saw, I mean, in there we can talk about the definition of paper products. But if we're ordering any type of paper products, so whether it be toilet paper or sticky notes, we have to make sure that it meets a recycled content percentage prior to purchasing. Or if not, then we have to document why we're purchasing something that doesn't meet that. It needs to be 30%. So then we CalRecycle, we have to document why it isn't. And then when CalRecycle comes and does the audit, we have to provide that documentation. And then also based on, it's a 0.08 ton per resident of procurement of organic waste products. So that could be mulch. It could be compost. It could be energy from biomass. You know, generated from biomass. It could be recycled gas. So anaerobic digesters create, you know, the process of an anaerobic digester creates basically the methane that you're trying to keep out of landfills, creates that. That can then be collected to then turn around in power. So right now, they're down in San Luis Obispo collects that, and actually what they don't use to power the facility and the anaerobic digester, they turn around and put on to PGE's grid. So it's actually, they don't produce enough to actually power vehicles. They don't have enough production for that. So what they do produce, they turn around and put on the grid. So it goes back to the energy grid. So we have to create, we have to adopt a policy that addresses collecting or procuring that organic waste for us. And I mean, for an example, it's roughly 2,400 tons annually. If we were to do it using mulch, it's roughly 2,400 tons annually that we would have to procure. If we were to do compost, it's roughly 1,400 tons of compost. That's a lot of procured organic waste. So, you know, looking for other ways that we could do that procurement, whether it be through, you know, right now our city facilities are powered by PG&E. So looking to see if there's any way that some of that energy that is being produced down and slow that's going onto the grid, if any of that would apply towards us for the next couple of years, you know, to offset some of our procurement requirements. And, you know, looking for ways, or, you know, if there ever is a way that our franchised waste hauler would be able to get and procure renewable, it's RNG, renewable natural gas, to power their vehicles. Right now they use CNG, but if there was a way that they could use RNG, then that would help offset our procurement requirements much quicker. So anyway, we need to update Title VIII. We need to adopt a policy, and we need to execute a franchise agreement with our waste hauler that includes SB 1383 requirements. Excuse me. And so update to the Title VIII, adopting the policy, all of that will bring back to you next month. But the executing the franchise agreement is a little bit harder since we've just now are in the process of adopting this ordinance. We have to pull a lot of this ordinance language into our franchise agreement. And then, you know, a lot of jurisdictions are still on, you know, a long-term agreement where they're just doing this as an amendment. For us, we are doing a whole brand new agreement. And so, you know, we have more to talk about and negotiate. And so while we've been doing a lot of that, you know, prior to SB 1383, now that we have SB 1383, we know what the regs look like, we know what our ordinance looks like, and now we know what it's going to look like for implementation. Now we can start negotiating with our franchise hauler, with Waste Management, on really what that and rates are going to look like. Now we know where IWMA is going to land with their rate. And then, you know, we can actually start to look at routes and that type of stuff in terms of this new requirement for collecting green bins across commercial and residential in terms of food waste, and really see what rates will look like and include that in part of the negotiations. Unfortunately, CalRecycle has said that everything has to be complete. So while the regs have said you had to have this all done by January 1st, CalRecycle understands that, you know, only having 14 months has made that a bit difficult. And then, you know, we also, SB 619, you know, Senator Laird also recognized that with this coming online, with there being the COVID-19 pandemic, with all of that happening at the same time, and really the COVID-19 pandemic happening before we even knew what the regulations were, that 14 months to get this all going would be hard for jurisdictions. And so SB 619 was signed into law in October 2021, which basically said that civil penalties that could be implemented against jurisdictions in this first year of implementation would be waived. CalRecycle had said, if you could get everything done and have no what they would consider a violation by June 30th, then you wouldn't need to submit a notification of intent to comply. Since we are negotiating an entire brand new franchise agreement, it is in our best interest to make sure that we have our notice of intent to comply in place in the off chance that that can't be done by June 30th. June 30th is here tomorrow. And what we don't want to do is be trying to work through all of this and not be where we need to be June 30th and then be in violation. Is June 30th, CalRecycle says they're going to come start knocking on people's doors looking for all of the paperwork. So we wanted to make sure. So basically, we have to submit the notice of intent by March 1st. We have to describe the continuing violation, which for us is that we don't yet have the franchise agreement in place. the reasons we've been unable to comply. For us, you know, it's that we haven't really had the staff time or waste management, you know, in terms of doing route reviews, knowing what it's going to look like to start doing some of that multifamily and doing all of that. We haven't had that capacity either with them. And then, you know, in moving this forward now. So a lot of that in the last 2 years has had an impact. And then our proposed actions are basically just that we'll have it in place by the end of the extension that we have right now, which is expires December 31st. And then by submitting that, it'll allow us the additional time to have an agreement in place so that we don't incur these civil penalties. A copy of what we are submitting to CalRecycle is included in the packet along with the resolution. And so the recommendations are to introduce for first reading by title only the draft ordinance that amends Title 6, Chapter 4 in its entirety in conformance with Assembly Bills 939, 341, 1826, and Senate Bill 1383, and to include the revisions to the definitions as presented, and then also to adopt a draft resolution authorizing the submittal to CalRecycle of a notification of intent to comply with the requirements of Senate Bill 1383 and to secure administrative civil penalty relief under the provisions of Senate Bill 619. And with that, I am happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Laura. I couldn't help but slightly chuckle when you said CalRecycle said they're going to be coming knocking on everyone's door. And I thought, I know a lot of residents that would like to knock on their door and find out where their CRV money is. Now, what I understand is that there's one, there's very little deviation that we've done from others in the county, other than maybe our terminology that might be specific to our hauler or some specifics there, but that we're really looking, like we do in Atascadero, when these types of very onerous requirements come onto us, we never look to go above and beyond. We're always meeting and doing what we have to do. We are allowing flexibility, like Laura said, with the waivers and the self-hauling. And so we're really doing what we need to do based upon the legislation. We're not going above and beyond because this is certainly going to be a burden for many. I know the intent is well-meaning, but the you know, playing it out is another thing. I know that IWA is also, they're working on education, both English and Spanish. They've been working with many of our commercial entities regarding AB 1826 since late 2019, and then others in preparation for 1383. So we're really, really on top of things there with our commercial entities. I know Holler will be assisting with education too. And really, there are a lot of details that are going to be fleshed out over the next couple of years. So what I do want to encourage us to do tonight is to try to keep at the big picture level and not get too down into details that we don't necessarily have the answers for tonight, and we're going to see those come about. So let's try to keep it at that bigger picture level. And with that, I will look to council for any questions that you have of Ms. Christensen. Councilmember Funk.
Yes. Can you, and first of all, thank you for this good, thorough, the work on this. I know this is a much bigger deal than it might feel to folks on the surface. Can you talk about the rationale for the offering a waiver to vacation rental properties, which might, I don't want us to end up giving them, a better deal, or end up with that trash and ending up in the landfill, when those venues might in fact produce quite a bit of recycled beverage bottles and those kinds of things, and also food waste due to the nature of time limited food consumption.
Sure. So waivers only apply to the organic material. So they would only be able to get a waiver for the green bin. They wouldn't be able to get a waiver for solid waste or recycling. So they'd still be required to have solid waste and recycling. And for the same for commercial, same for vacation rentals, same for that is, you know, with in terms of, although space constraints, I don't necessarily know if they would qualify for a space constraint. I suppose there could be some circumstance that they would, but I think it would be more de minimis, where if it's a vacation rental, but they're only renting, you know, once a month, or, you know, they don't have consistent rentals, then they might want to come in for a waiver and say, you know, the level of, you know, the same as maybe a an office setting where, you know, they don't produce yard waste because maybe they have landscapers that come and take care of all of the yard trimmings. And so then the food waste that's collected is de minimis, and, you know, trying to monitor contamination of, you know, your renters who are there for a weekend, I think is very hard. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, a lot of it is if they're meeting the de minimis requirements and they aren't creating the same level where you would look at a single family home who has people who are in the home every single day purchasing groceries regularly, you know, having consistent food waste and, you know, in essence, probably in some of those instances, yard waste, it's at a different level than a, you know, perhaps a one weekend or a couple weekends a month rental. But again, that waiver, they have to be able to show some of that. They can't just put a waiver in and say, hey, we don't do it, you know. And again, it only applies to green waste. It wouldn't apply to the other, to recycling and to solid waste. And so if people don't want to sign up for solid waste and food waste, I mean, solid waste and recycling, then they need to come in and get a no-fee permit to be a self-hauler. And then they need to prescribe to and follow the regulations with regards to self-hauling.
Okay. Thank you. And then in just in general terms, can you describe what's happening after people put, you know, their yard trimmings and their coffee grounds and their old pizza crusts into the green bin, how that's processed so that that becomes a good thing, you know, with all that mixed together?
Sure. So I don't know the exact process because that's done by, you know, the processing facilities, but at least here it for residential, it's allowed to be commingled. And then it goes to Buckeye up in Paso Robles. No, well, Paso Robles, San Miguel. It is kind of, you know, processed a little bit there. And then they do actually take it to a facility in Monterey County that does processing of it. So, you know, a lot of times that it gets dumped out, the larger stuff that can go for mulching is separated and goes towards mulching. Smaller pieces that can't are then separated and go towards composting. But what they actually do at the Monterey facility and how their process is, I don't know for sure. But in general, that's a lot of times how it happens is, you know, you source separate out the larger stuff and then a little different. But then some of the smaller stuff goes for composting and the larger stuff. But when you're talking like for us, when you're talking large scale food producers, like our grocery stores, our restaurants, that's collected differently. And that goes down. So that's collected as clean or very clean food waste. Then that's taken down to San Luis Obispo, where it goes to HCI. And then that goes through the anaerobic digestion process. And so then that's where the methane is collected to become energy. And then the back end of all of that is then compost.
Great. And then is it fair to assume as this is rolling forward that the organization that's going to deal with getting and receiving and utilizing edible food, that the food bank is going to take a lead in that?
Yeah. So the SB 1383 regulations require edible food generators the tier one, and then at some point the tier two, they actually have to contract. So they have to have a contract or a written agreement with a edible food recovery organization, which in our county is the Slow Food Bank. Mm-hmm. And so all of these generators have to enter into a contract or written agreement with Slow Food Bank. And then churches, organizations are then agency partners of the Slow Food Bank who get, you know, access or can go and pick up the recovered food from these generators.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Other staff questions? Councilmember Borba.
Yeah. Laura, you did a good job of explaining all of these things that have to happen. I think the question for most residents might be, how might it affect them? Because a lot of the things you described, of course, are going to fall on the folks you mentioned, you know, grocery stores, restaurants, you know, all of that food handling stuff and all the paperwork that has to go with that is going to fall on some of those businesses. And from the city perspective, the IWMA is going to help with a lot of that for the city itself, but there is an impact on our residents and our businesses. And, you know, folks are wondering, okay, this all sounds kind of interesting or kind of boring or whatever, but how does it affect me? The direct impact on residents is they're going to see some rate increases ultimately, right? Is really the impact on me. You know, the IWMA fee will increase, and I assume there'll be some sort of hauler rate increase in order to comply with all this stuff.
Yeah, so there is, I mean, we know there will be a rate increase because we do know IWMA has a rate increase coming down the line. So we know for sure there'll be a rate increase. And then we also know, I mean, in terms of residential, this is an impact because they now have to be source separating their food waste. So where most people would put their food waste in their trash cans, they now need to be adding it to their green waste cans. And so while that, you know, doesn't seem intuitive, now we need to have all waste generators. So it's every waste generator of single family residents, multifamily. So anyone who generates waste now has to source separate. And we have a 3-container system right now. So they need to, trash needs to go in trash. Recyclable materials need to go in the, so trash goes in the black can, recyclable materials go in the blue can, and then yard trimmings and food waste now go in the green can. And this is residential, commercial, and multifamily. So it impacts all generators across the board.
All right. Thank you.
Other questions? Councilmember Funk, sorry.
Yeah, I have one additional question as you were describing what goes into which can. The question that often comes, and I don't know if you happen to know the answer to this, would be where are people supposed to put the containers that food comes in that are labeled as compostable material? Do those go into the blue can, the green can, or the gray can?
They go in the gray can. We actually don't have, in this county right now, we don't have the ability to compost those the way that they should be. So those bags that you can buy for your food waste containers or some of that silverware or foodware or some plastics that say that they are compostable, we, in this county right now, we don't have the ability to actually compost that type of material. So right now, that type of material in our county does need to go in the trash.
Okay. Thank you for letting me know.
Yeah, unless some of it is recyclable, but most of it's not actually, can't be recycled. So, yeah, trash.
Other questions of staff? All right. Seeing none, I'm going to go ahead and open us up to public comment on this item. If there's anyone on the webinar, you can raise your hand with a little icon at the bottom of the screen. If you're on the phone, go ahead and press *9. And if you're watching or listening and haven't called in yet and would like to, 805-538-2888. So anyone, public comment is open. Anybody? anybody want to talk trash? That'd be nice. Anyone? Do we have anyone on the phone, Luke?
Yeah, we have one person that just called in, so we're going to screen them to see which item they would like to talk about.
All right. In the meantime, if there's anyone in the webinar, go ahead and raise your hand. Don't be shy. Or is it Laura is so thorough that nobody ever has a question or a comment?
I try.
You see someone from Waste Management here, Ms. Gomez, and I don't know if you had wanted to speak or if you were just hanging out to see if you were needed. There she is. Why don't we go ahead and bring on Liz Gomez?
There we go. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Thank you. First of all, I'd like to thank Lara for the thorough presentation and her ability to really grasp everything that's happening with this new legislation. It's a lot, as you have been listening to her. They're expecting a lot. And when I say there, I mean capital cycle. There's a lot more that needs to be done. So in turn, you know, we all need to then work together to make sure that all of it is, that we are in compliance, that the city of Atascadero will comply, that, you know, we are not going to be assessed any types of fees or, you know, penalties of any kind at all, because that's not what, you know, we would like to happen. I believe that, you know, we are well prepared as a company to work with IWMA and with the city to make sure that that compliance is taken care of, and that, you know, we are well on the path to making sure the regulation is, you know, the transition and from, you know, now working with organics and what that means to customers and customer education and all that type of material that needs to get out. And this is going to take a lot of customer education. You know, it's not something that's, you know, so undoable that they are not going to be able to do this. We want to do it and make it as, you know, easily for them to be able to participate in this program. But I think that the biggest change now is that 1826 and 341 were like a precursor to where we are today. Now they're actually saying, okay, now we're going to enforce this, and you jurisdictions are going to have to, you know, make sure that everybody is complying, and that includes residential, which is the biggest change for this legislation. It was always focused on commercial. Now we're looking at residential as well. But, you know, I think that it's very doable. We can all work together to make sure that it gets done. We're working well with the city to understand all of the ordinance needs and trying to align that up with the contract. Going into an extension, you know, it's just on top of everything else, but what else is new? And if anybody can get it done, I know that we can do it there in Atascadero. So we're very optimistic and hopeful that, you know, Atascadero is going to be in compliance. We make sure that we get everything that we can do as a company to make sure that happens.
Thank you, Ms. Gomez.
Okay, I don't know if there are any other questions for us, but Laura did a wonderful job in explaining it.
Yes, she did. I think okay. We're good, but thank you very much for coming on.
Okay, you're welcome.
All right. And Luke, did we have anyone on the phone wishing to speak?
Yes, we have Jeff Oslin.
We'll try this again. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. Once again, Council, great presentation, Laura. Fantastic job. This is Jeff Oslin. I do have a couple questions and comments, making sure that in the regulations that go forward that we are taking into consideration our grocery stores and how that they can dispose of their spoiled food, which currently, and like a lot of vegetables, might go to people to feed chickens or pigs, making sure we have a way to account for that for them. because the big cities don't have pig farmers, but we do. The next things that concern me is, of course, the outreach to our Hispanic community and especially our restaurants to make sure they understand how to do this. I think that is something we have to look at differently. Just putting a pamphlet in the bill, I don't know how many people actually read the pamphlets that come in the mail in the bill, but people pay the bill, they go online. So how we accomplish that in Atascadero, I think needs to be under great consideration. And then the other one is, if you live in a apartment complex or condo area or something like Dove Creek, having all three bins may not be necessary. I know we discussed this about downtown with our green bins for our leaves and such, but a lot of these yards are so small that they don't have any grass or leaves or branches to get rid of. And I heard that saying that they would be required to have a third bin. I just hope that we can write the regulations that that's not the case. That's all I have for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Oslin. And so last call, is there anyone else wishing to speak on this item? Go ahead and raise your hand using the raise hand icon at the bottom of the screen or press star 9 on the phone. Are you seeing anyone else, Luke?
Not at this time.
Okay. I'll go ahead and close public comment then and bring it back to council. And so, Laura, the three questions, one was, you know, taking into consideration grocery stores, so some that may already be doing that recycling with getting that to farms or farmers that need that feed. Is that something that they can easily document? We can help them, or IWMA, they'll be educated on how to do that so they're in compliance with doing what they're already doing.
Yeah, so whatever, I mean, the spoiled food is obviously not recoverable, right, in terms of edible food recovery. So what they're looking for is that you're now taking food that can still go to feed a person, that you're not intentionally spoiling that or doing something, and you're creating a way to make that food recoverable. So it's not, so that what's already spoiled or what can't, they can continue to do the donating of that. And we have allowed for, you know, we did also include in our regulations, which we had prior, you know, cold fruit and vegetables, so things that are on site, that those can continue. So we're still allowing for agricultural byproducts and that type of stuff on site. And it doesn't prevent them from being able to donate that. What it says is if it is recoverable for, you know, if it's edible and recoverable, then you have to, you know, make allowances for that, but not for what's not recoverable. And so by them, you know, diverting it and putting it in and giving it to pig farmers or that type of farmers, you know, we like that because it's already diverting it, you know, and it's not having to go into a green bin. So that it doesn't prevent that process from continuing.
He also mentioned the outreach to restaurants, you know, particularly Hispanic speakers who might have Spanish speakers who might have I know that you said we're sending out, or IWMA has been sending out information, both English and Spanish. But I think also, Laura, you had said that they've been going and actually talking to businesses, not just mailing them pamphlets that are going to end up in the trash.
Yeah. So on the commercial side, with AB 1826, and because that was hitting restaurants, hotels, grocery stores, that those were having to already be in compliance with this organic diversion long before SB 1383 came into to effect. So they were already on the ground doing that level of education. Obviously, you know, COVID-19 and restaurants, there was, you know, a kind of a break in all of that. And really the last year they've been back on the ground. Kelly York with IWMA, you know, she works for IWMA, but she's also a resident of Atascadero. So she's been doing a lot of the outreach here in town. She's gone to a lot of the commercial businesses, to the restaurants, to the small offices, small businesses, you know, those who aren't, you wouldn't think of as organic generators. And so she's been doing a lot of that outreach. I know that they're working to figure out how to broach the language barrier in some of those aspects, and they're working around that. IWMA also has, they work with Science Discovery, and so they've utilized some of those with Science Discovery to help do some of that education and outreach to commercial. They have an English and Spanish flyer, like the one that was included in the packet, that isn't just being mailed, it's also available on their website. We'll update our website to include SB 1383 information, and we'll link to a lot of those so that both English and Spanish is available for those, you know, who are looking for some of the education or the education materials, so that we make sure that that information is being offered in, you know, a language that is understandable to the majority of our residents and commercial business operators.
It seems to me that the chamber might also be useful in, not that they have to get out the information, but just say, you know, to be able to link to, like, hey, sure. You know, businesses, here's what's coming up, and, you know, because people may pay attention to certain things that they get and not others, like we all do, because we're inundated. And then finally, if you could speak to the, you know, in any residents where you've got, like Mr. Austin said, condominiums, townhomes, places where you don't have a bunch of green waste, what are the requirements there?
So it's organics now, it's not green waste. So right. It doesn't, so at this point, it doesn't matter if you have no yard trimmings, because you do have food waste. And so in essence, we've always had for, you know, residential, we've always had a green bin. But what it is now is some people didn't sign on to the green bin because they didn't need it, because they had a landscaper, or because they were in, you know, an area like a condominium or whatnot where it wasn't required. Now they will have to have a green bin. And so it's either figuring out with, you know, in some of the multifamily complexes, you know, figuring out where they can have a communal green bin, or in those where they all have their own waste, you know, where they are all their own individual customers, then figuring out where they can store a green bin if they can, or if not, then how they could perhaps share it, or, you know, something to make sure that everyone is in compliance and is utilizing that, because there aren't waivers for residential. They, you know, they don't apply to residential areas. They only apply on the commercial vacation rentals or multifamily. So on some of those residential where they are their own customers, they will have to figure out how to be in compliance or sign up to be a self-hauler, you know, come in and get a permit to do their own self-hauling. And some people do, you know, some residential don't have a green waste because they've always done their own composting. So if a residential wants to continue to do their own composting and not have a green bin on site, then they can come in and do a no-fee permit, you know, to say that they are doing their own, they're doing their on-site composting, you know, kind of like self-hauling. And so that's the reason why they're not signing up to have a green bin as well.
Well, but as we know, and you discussed earlier, not all of the material that can go into now the organic waste bin is really suited for compost. So does that argument, is that a valid argument then?
So organic material, what can go in the green bin is yard trimmings and food waste. So right. While there is a larger definition for organic waste, yes. that can't all go into the green bin. So like organic textiles, carpets,
right.
Treated lumber and wood, that's all considered organic waste. It's not considered organic material. So while
what I was talking about is, like, you know, most people aren't going to throw, say, the bone from a ribeye into their compost pile, or a donut or something like that. So it just seems like there's certain foods, not that I'm arguing for a green bin for this much food waste every other week, but I guess we'll see how that all fleshes out. All right. So are there any last questions or comments to be made before we look for a motion?
I think, Mayor, what you just hit on, though, is when you say, like, people are going to feel weird about throwing a, you know, a bone from a steak in their green waste bin or a donut or something. But that's exactly what they are now wanting you to do. And that's part of the education and outreach that will be done, which is, hey, all this stuff that we used to even have a sticker that said, don't throw this in your green waste. The state now wants you to throw all that leftover food into your green bin.
Well, and I was saying that for those who say I do my own composting,
right.
Like I've had a compost pile for a decade, but I wouldn't put a ribeye bone or a donut or something like that in it. So, you know, it's kind of funny, but anyway, so
one last thing I would say is that, you know, this being the state, there are a lot of incongruities or, you know, counterintuitive and in some cases completely contradictory things that are involved. For example, like the chip giveaway that the city did over the weekend, that doesn't count. You know, that is exactly what they supposedly want, which is diversion of stuff ever entering into the waste stream. And yet it doesn't count because it never crossed a scale and got accounted for in the first place. Those kind of things. And, you know, so there are, this is certainly by no means a perfect law, and it imposes a whole bunch of burdens on businesses and stuff that, you know, aren't the idea of the city of Atascadero, but we are stuck with ensuring that, you know, we comply with it. And part of that compliance is, you know, requiring all these things.
Well, at that, might you like to make a motion?
Well, we already had public comment. Yes. I will make a motion that we adopt staff's recommendation to introduce for first reading the draft ordinance and to adopt the draft resolution submitting a notification of intent to comply to CalRecycle.
With the changes as amended?
Yes.
Okay.
Second.
A motion by Councilmember Bourbeau and a second by Councilmember Darris. And I would ask that our city clerk read the title of the ordinance and then roll call.
An ordinance of the City Council of the City of Atascadero, California, amending its entirety, Title 6, Chapter 4, Solid Waste Collection of the Atascadero Municipal Code in conformity with Assembly Bills 939, 341, 1826, and Senate Bill 1383. Councilmember Bourbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. All right, we are now on to council announcements and committee reports. I will go on my squares here. Start with Mayor Pro Tem Newsom.
Nothing to report. At least I can't remember anything at this point.
Councilmember Funk.
Yes, I had a meeting last week with the Executive Committee of the Homeless Services Oversight Council. And in that, we talked about ways in which we are looking to make HSOC a more HSOC is not really in charge of anything, but it does have more a better vision of what's going on in homelessness and housing than any other entity currently does. And so we're looking to take advantage of that in a more powerful way. And this really has to do with our thinking about HSOC as having both a role in keeping the money train running and that funds all of the work in homeless services that's predominantly done by not-for-profits in our community and secondarily some by county staff and some by city staff, but mostly county. And then the other is more of a system oversight and advocacy role that we want to be taking on over time. And that will mean that we're going to make more extensive use of our committees that look at data and finance, that look at housing, and that look at service provision in homelessness. So it'll just be a more active and visible role with HSOC. Similarly, I will be meeting on Thursday with the steering committee of the 0 to 10 year plan to address homelessness. One of our clear decisions is that we're not going to do 0 to 10 years. We're going to go, we're going to stop it. It would be foolish for us to try, presumptuous for us to try to go beyond 5 years. So we'll keep it at that and try to have a vibrant plan. That process too is reaching a stage where it's going to become more visible. I've been very quiet about what that group is doing as we work through issues around data and getting a basic situation assessment in place. But now that's going to become more visible as we work to get input from a broader range of constituencies on the key decisions that we face as a community. So stay tuned.
Thank you. Councilmember Barbeau. I think our management report was your item.
Yeah, I think I have nothing new to report.
Thank you. Councilmember Darris.
And I have nothing to report.
All right. I have nothing new to report, so I will leave it at that, and we will move on to individual determination or actions. Do we have any? I have one, and that is, Laura, you go have a nice birthday with your family.
Happy birthday.
Yeah.
We're letting you off early tonight.
Yes. Enjoy.
That's your gift. Meeting adjourned, folks. See you next time.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.